You're listening to The Andy Finn Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS Radio Network.
The Andy Finn Show is back, and I'm talking with Concetta Stewart about leadership. Concetta, after a successful career in the corporate sector, moved to academia and was not only a professor, but in short order, became chair of a department and then dean of the College of Communication at Temple University. So she knows something about leadership. And Concetta, I want to go on to the third piece of advice we heard. A woman by the name of Judith Shapiro, who's the president of Barnard College, suggested this little tidbit for people, that leading is about serving, and that the job of a leader is to support your people.
Well, you know, I find a lot of truth in that, and again, not in some naive way, that one is still the leader, but one must not forget what it means to the big responsibility there really is in being the leader of an organization, that you're serving multiple publics, not just the people in your organization. You have a variety of constituencies, and your job really is to achieve the goals that they look to see from the organization as well.
And it's a lot of responsibility, really, isn't it?
Well, that is the part of it that sometimes can be overwhelming. However, when I think about the serving part, that is really what comforts me in knowing that in doing my job, I'm helping other people achieve their ends. And so it doesn't seem as overwhelming as it's got to be my goals, my objectives, and my vision that I'm trying to achieve.
Well, and of course, the principle is to get a win-win out of it. As you achieve your objectives, you help others achieve theirs. Because theoretically, everybody in an organization is singing off the same page, but we all know that there are individual goals that may be competing with the organizational goals.
Right, and I think at any turn, you're right. There's somebody who's going to win and somebody who's going to lose. But I think that organizations and the objectives that they're trying to achieve are complicated, and that somebody may lose on one front but can win on another, or be set up to be effective down the road on something that they might want to achieve. And that's really the way to be looking at it. I really don't like to look at it as battles and who's going to come out winning and losing. And I found that whenever you push somebody to the wall and you make them cry uncle, it never feels good, and it never sticks, and the victory is very short-lived because you really look pretty cheap when you do it.
Well, and this is interesting because I do think that this gets at, if not a difference between men and women, perhaps a masculine and a feminine approach to leadership. Because I do think, and we know from the work of people like Deborah Tannen, that for men, a lot of this is about dominance. And that if you think about the men that get in trouble, whether it's the boys at Enron that weren't looking out for all their people, they had tremendous responsibilities and they shirked them, or you look at somebody who has a fall from grace in the corporate world or in government, and when you uncover it, what you find is they had a nasty streak in them, right? I think John Bolton's a good example. This is a guy that plays hardball. Now, he's driven, and one argument is, well, you don't get to the heights of leadership, whether it's John Bolton's position as a Deputy Secretary of State and now UN Ambassador, or whether it is a CEO of a Fortune 500 company or Dean of a college. You don't get to those levels without being driven, without stepping on a few toes, without you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs, is what you hear from the men in the business. And twice now you've had to say, as you've explained the people side of this, you've said, I don't want to sound Pollyannish or whatever. And this woman's advice is that leading is about serving. So I do think that we may be hitting here on at least a shading of difference between the way men look at leadership and women look at it.
Well, you know, while I do agree to some extent with what you're saying, and I'm obviously very familiar with Tannen's work, I don't think that we can make that broad generalization about men and women's style, simply because not all men behave in the competitive ways that you've just described. As I've mentioned, I've learned some wonderful leadership skills, some very caring leadership skills from men that I've worked for. I remember one boss saying, you know, my folks, I give them a lot of opportunities, but I make sure that they never get into more trouble than I can get them out of. I mean, the other one, a boss had said to me about, Conchetta, nobody wakes up in the morning wanting to be a failure, so it's your job to figure out how to make them a success. These are very caring ways of looking at management, and I've learned that from men. So I would say, by and large, the behavior that you describe typically is men, but not all men. And I would also say to you that type of behavior is not long-lived in an organization. Those people tend to move around a lot. They may be effective for a point in time, but does what they do stick in the organization beyond their tenure there? And very often it doesn't. That kind of leadership style is not one that really compels people to follow and support.
I agree with you in that I have had bosses, meaning CEOs in organizations I've worked for, who understood leadership and understood how to motivate people and how to reach people and get the most out of them. And they were not these jerks who dictate. They were very much consensus builders. But I just feel like when you look, whether it's in Washington or you look at the Fortune 500, the people that make it to the top, a lot of them are reputed to be jerks. Now, am I wrong about that? Or is it that playing hardball playing hardball succeeds in a lot of situations?
Well, sure, playing hardball succeeds in a lot of situations, but does it last? And are those the people that go down in history as wonderful leaders? And I mean, if you think about just in recent times, who are some of the people that we really respect as leaders? And I would say their behavior is not basically I win, you lose.
I agree with you, and I think that there's an old adage that be kind to the people you meet on the way up the ladder, because you're going to pass those same people on the way down.
Exactly.
And as you were saying, people move from organization to organization, but you're likely to have contact with them again within a particular field or industry. And so what you do, how you treat them, does come back to you.
Yeah, I really just don't think, I think it's very short-term thinking. I really also believe that when those folks go down, boy, they go down in flames.
You know, I was thinking if you don't have a lot of friends, they let you fall.
Yeah, and hard.
Yeah, whereas if you've, you know, when someone, let's take somebody that might be accused of sexual harassment or whatever, the people are accused of anything from embezzlement to something that's a judgment call that you don't have the hard facts about, maybe. If you're a boss who has the respect of his or her people and has treated people right, people come out of the woodwork and say, well, that's not my experience of
right.
that person. Whereas if you're being accused of being a jerk and everybody's general impression is you're a jerk, people don't come to your defense.
Or might help you a little bit, you know, nudging you out.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Right.
Well, let me move on to two related pieces of advice. The second piece of advice that Judith Shapiro included was, don't force agreement. Negotiate agreement through persuasion. That's my read of what she said. And then this dovetails with what Susan Lin said. She's the president and CEO of Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia, an organization that's been in the news quite a bit in the last year. And what she said was, negotiate win-win situations. Always leave something on the table for the other side. And I always think of leaving it on the table as not necessarily that anybody gets it, but I think I know what she means. So what they're saying here is playing hardball to the nth degree is may appear to be a successful strategy at first glance, but ultimately there's a better way to deal with negotiations.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I can't help but, I guess, chuckle to myself a little bit, having been a parent of young children. You quickly learn that being right or being able to extract a behavior doesn't feel good and usually doesn't last and doesn't work. And it's really a matter of dignity in many ways, where the individual, be it a subordinate or be it your own child, has to feel like they've got some say and some stake in their own destiny. And I think it's really important to enable them to make their views known and to really feel that they're able to be players in the organization.
Well, you know what that reminds me of? I just finished reading a book called The World is Flat. And you and I could have a separate conversation about this because we're both interested in these issues. But it's by Thomas Friedman. And while Friedman has been writing, has been a journalist for a long time and is a well-known left-of-center journalist, he has been a futurist in recent years. And this is not his first book about technology and how technology is changing the world. And so The World is Flat is about globalization and about how supply chaining and the use of the internet and other technologies means that people can outsource and insource and find what they need in many different ways and situations. And he has many, many stories in his book about different companies who now get this or that piece of what they do from other countries. But it's not simply a drain out of the U.S. He points out that there are benefits to the U.S. to all this. Well, in this whole thing, he ends the book. The last chapter is about terrorism and Al-Qaeda and what Al-Qaeda has learned about supply chaining and about outsourcing. Mm. And what he talked about as part of this and how the West is going to combat this, he said, we overlook the role of humiliation.
Yeah.
And that the number one reason why people become your enemies is they feel humiliated. And he talks about Germany after World War I, whether that was simply perceived humiliation and the rise of Hitler out of that, or the way Muslim young men feel today. And it isn't that they start that way. It's that there are leaders who can incite them and play on their humiliation because the West is so dominant. If, you know, what he argues is if Islam is the great religion, as every religion mm-hmm. believes it is, if it's chosen by Allah, then why is it that the West is more successful at so many things?
Also, too, they say a life without dignity is no life at all.
Right. And so what I thought was interesting, as you said that, was that a lot of this is about if you win this battle, but you win it totally, at what cost do you win? And I think that's what you were getting at in part.
Well, too, and this is going to sound so like the good capitalist, but, you know, if you vanquish your enemy, who's going to buy your products? I mean, so there's a sense that you really don't want to completely annihilate other people in your organization or even in many ways your competition because, you know, an annihilated opponent can't be useful to you at any point.
Well, and particularly if we go to the corporate world for a moment, the old model that you were in one line of business and the other guy was your opponent, and so whether you had a price war or you had whatever you had to beat them and to sell more, that's kind of an old model. Today, we rely on partners and alliances to supply piece parts to go into products, to supply labor, to supply distribution in other countries, whatever it is. But it's a big pie out there. There's enough for everybody if you figure out how to share it smartly.
And you need to be flexible because it's constantly changing. Who's the customer? Who's the supplier? Right, exactly.
I like that. Well, when we come back, we will go on to the next point, which is about teams.